Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Pure Nintendo Podcast. This is your weekly dose of all things Nintendo. My name is Gemma, and joining me again this week, I have my two very good friends. I have Kirk. Welcome back, Kirk.
Hello, how's everyone doing tonight, today, this afternoon, morning, whenever you're listening?
Yes, exactly. Welcome back, and I also have Trev. Welcome back, Trev.
Konnichiwa, everybody.
Switched it up. Nice. That's usually Kirk's job.
Okay.
Thank you both for joining me again this week. We have a big show full of lots of news to get through. We're going to talk about E3 news. Our Switch Year in Review, of course, is out. A bit of Zelda discussion, Pokemon, the games we're playing, etc., etc. Let's get to it. So to start with, there was some news during the week that dropped on Twitter from E3 itself saying basically that E3 is over. It was just kind of out there suddenly. And I mean, I wanted to ask you guys what you thought in terms of, were you surprised about this? How do you feel about this? You both have been to E3. I never even made it to one. So that's kind of sad for me. I'll never get to go to one. But the tweet was, after more than two decades of E3, each one bigger than the last, the time has come to say goodbye. Thanks for the memories. What do you guys think? I mean, we obviously had it canceled this year. Like the 2023 edition of E3 was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think it would come back? Were you surprised by this news?
The funny thing about it for me was that I was not even thinking about E3 when right. they made the announcement. And usually at this time of year is when I'm starting to get geared up about getting my media pass and such.
Right.
But I did not think a single thing of it until they announced that it was over. So I guess I'm not surprised because I wasn't wondering why we hadn't heard anything.
Yeah, okay. Is that what happens usually this time of year is when they start to get nominations for the people who want to come to the next event? Is that right?
Yeah, they would usually, maybe even a little before this, start to talk about or make the announcement that, you know, if you're media and you want to register or, you know, whatever capacity, here's where you do it. Right. But then usually around like January or February, I think is when they would start opening up your hotel reservation options and items like that. So yeah, sounds right to me anyway. I could be off a little bit, but that sounds right.
Okay. Interesting. Trev, do you have thoughts?
I wasn't surprised. I think the writing's been on the wall, so to speak, for a while. It's easy to blame COVID and all that, but I think even before that, there were signs that, you know, E3 was maybe losing a bit of what it started as, you know, way back in like the mid-90s. But, you know, I had a good run. I mean, you know, 2+ decades. And, I take a little bit of comfort. Well, maybe not comfort, but knowing that I went to the last one with Kirk and Harrison was the other staffer with us. So that's kind of a cool thing to say. You know, I was at the last E3.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. So what year was that one?
2019.
Yeah, 19.
Wow. So it hasn't been around for quite a few years. I sort of forgotten that, actually.
And I think we're realizing that maybe we didn't miss it as much as we thought, you know, because especially being Nintendo fans primarily. I mean, Nintendo's been knocking it out with their directs. And
This is true. Yeah. We did a little poll on YouTube like the last couple of days and just asking if people will miss the gaming event. And it looks like 75% have said yes, they will. And 25% have said no. So, yeah, not sure who said the no's, but that's okay. I mean, yeah, I think some people, it's not for everyone, obviously. It's a bit like Game Award shows, Kirk. It's not for everyone.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about E3 is that it's two different things to different people. Like I see a lot of people saying, well, it's already been replaced by the summer game show or whatever that thing is. What's that called? The Jeff's Keighley's event. But I mean, if you're a fan at home waiting for announcements and wanting one big event to where, you know, you can tune in for 3 or 4 days in a row and see what people have coming out, then yes, I agree. But that's not what E3 was originally, and that's not what it was to an awful lot of people even now with the trade show aspect of it. I mean, that's how it starts, right? To get buyers in and developers and publishers and media and get people talking about games and make those connections. And that's what almost all expos are for initially, as opposed to we're going to have a big event that's going to blast out to the world and all the fans are going to see it. Both are important, but E3 served both those roles, and the Summer Game Show does not serve that second role at all. But I don't know that that role is needed anymore. I mean, expos are dying all over the place. How long ago did it happen with Macworld for me when Apple decided we're done? We can just reach people directly and people come to us when they, you know, want to set something up. We'll let everybody else figure this out on their own. And once Apple pulled, then Macworld, the expo died. And I only mention that because that's the first one I started going through before E3.
Yeah, okay. It's interesting. Yeah, it seems like, I guess they have a finite lifespan and there are others that exist. And Nintendo even had its own kind of, would you call it an expo? The one they had in, was it September? In Seattle, it's like Nintendo's. I don't know what they call it.
Oh yeah.
That's more of a fan event, right?
Probably. Yeah.
I didn't go, so I can't say for sure. Maybe there is a lot going on behind the scenes, but it felt like a fan event.
You could argue in recent years that E3 had become more of a fan event. You know, once they opened it up to the public, you know, it wasn't just an industry trade show. And I mean, that has pros and cons, but. You know, I think that was a factor maybe in its, decline. Certainly not the main thing, but just one of many elements that kind of added up. And, you know, in this post-COVID world, they're realizing, hey, we just don't have that professional audience that we once had because there's more options now.
Yeah. Well, and I think the fan event portion of it was a symptom of it, really. Like, yes, attendance was dying. People aren't making those trips anymore and spending that money. So let's get the fans in so that we still have 60,000 people showing up in a day. It worked. But already that's an indication, even before COVID and everything else, that this type of event is starting to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, makes sense. I know, and we were set, I was set to go this year, and I think this year did they make it a bit of a hybrid? Well, I mean, I know it didn't happen this year, but it was meant to be like a hybrid situation. There was like a media day or something, or 2 days, and then there was a fan day or something like that. They'd separate it a little bit,
Yeah, they split it. The first couple days were industry only, and then the second couple days, they were going to open a different area of the floor to the fans.
Yeah, which could have worked well. We'll never know.
Yeah, I was hoping. I was really hoping that was going to work.
Yeah, that would have been cool. Really cool, I think. But anyway, I mean, the people who run E3, the company behind it, do they do other events? I assume it's...
That's ESA, right? The Entertainment Software Association?
Yeah, so I wonder if they'll replace it with something else. Or I don't know. I don't know what they'll do. But I guess they have other things that they... present.
No, the news will get out one way or another. I mean, even before E3, there was like the Tokyo Game Show and all those things, you know, back when I was like, you know, a kid. So, you know, one way or another, they're going to get what they need to industry folk and fans, especially now that, you know, it's gaming's grown so much.
Yeah, and it has. I mean, that's a really good point. Look at where we are now compared to when it started 20 plus years ago. I mean, yeah. It's exponential, really, when you think about it. Millions and millions of gamers and millions and millions of, well, games and sales, and there's all sorts. How many consoles we have now. Think about the 90s. It was really just, it was more finite, like it was a smaller cluster to worry about. It's really expanded a lot since then. Yeah, so I guess sad news overall in that something has ended that a lot of people feel fondness for, and... who knows what's next, but we do have other things like, I guess the shows we've mentioned, PAX, etc., that fill that void, plus Nintendo's Directs, like you said, Kirk. It's, did you say that? I think you said that. Yeah.
Trevor. I think,
Trevor said that, sorry.
But he's right.
We are of like mind.
Yeah. It's hard to tell the difference sometimes because we think so unilaterally. Yeah, cool. Anything else to say about E3 being over? Like, what's your fondest memory of E3? I guess that would be interesting to hear since you both were participants.
Fondest memory in person or just overall?
I guess in person, but if there's a overall one that you can think of that's not in person, that would also be fine.
Well, in person limits it for me because I was only at the one, but
I mean, just being there the first day, was that something special? Just like, wow, I'm at E3. Because that would feel pretty cool.
Yeah. And I had been to trade shows before, but, you know, so I wasn't overwhelmed per se, but it was definitely, I'd never been to one quite of that scope. And I remember, I guess the thing that stands out to me, I remember waiting in line, to get into the Nintendo area. Because it wasn't, you know, necessarily like exclusive access for press, you know, we were kind of mixed in.
Yeah.
And that was the year Link's Awakening HD came out, and they had these beautiful like diorama, like toy setups along the line. And I just remember staring at them and taking pictures, and I'm like, this looks so cool. And then get to the game and I'm like, wow, the game kind of looks like the toys. And you know, it was just, it showed me that there was a lot of like pomp put into it, and not in a bad way. Because, you know, a lot of E3 is walking and waiting and, you know, rinse and repeat. So to make the booths fun and attractive, even when you're not playing a game, that impressed me.
Yeah, that's cool. What about you, Kirk? Do you have a fond memory?
Actually, I have quite a few, so I won't go into all of them. I will reiterate, E3 is where I met Pure Nintendo. The first time I met Justin, we were in line for Nintendo's press conference. Cool. And I wasn't writing for Pure Nintendo then. I was writing for Technology Tell at the time. So I like that connection.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But I guess my favorite, or the one I tell the most, is the time Hulk Hogan prevented me from getting to the bathroom.
What?
I think I should just leave it there. It's more interesting that way.
Than the guts, yeah.
He must have been promoting a game. I can't even remember what the game was. I remember watching him talk a little bit. But then after that media event was over, I was in the hallway and I needed to use the restroom. And Hulk Hogan came out with this group of handlers, maybe bodyguards. Did he need bodyguards? They took up the whole hallway, and Hulk was walking so slowly. I'm assuming from the years of wrestling, or he was tired or injured or whatever. And I could not get beyond any of these guys. I mean, if you have Hulk Hogan and then you have bodyguards next to him who are the same size as Hulk Hogan, all walking painfully slow, and they were taking up the whole hallway. So I'm just like trudging by. I'm like, oh my God, get out of the way.
That's quite funny. Yeah, that's a unique story right there. So
he's not his own bodyguard, huh? Seems like he could be his own security.
We made it. I did not need to give him any tope suicidas or any other wrestling maneuvers I wouldn't be able to execute anyway, but the thought ran through my mind.
Yeah, you can name them at least and describe
can't do that.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, thanks for the memories, I guess, guys, and thank you, E3, I suppose, for bringing us whatever, you know, over the 20 plus years. I do remember, I never went obviously, but as a fan, you know, watching it from Australia, you know, especially before COVID, well, obviously before COVID because it wasn't on during COVID, but, you know, even sort of 10 or so years ago, probably just before I joined Pure Nintendo, actually, I would, you know, and in Australia, the time difference is, you know, go take that into account, because a lot of the things happen during the night. So I would wake up and have all these really cool announcements and things to catch up on, you know, to watch. So it was almost like a little Christmas present. You know, you wake up, I mean, not that it was at Christmas time, but you know what I mean? Like you wake up and there's a little surprise. Oh, wonder what happened overnight at E3. So yeah, that was cool. Anyway, let's move on. So this time of year, speaking of Christmas, it is December. It's mid-December. It's almost the end of the year. And Nintendo has this kind of annual tradition where it sends out an email to, you know, account holders to say, here's your Switch year in review data. And you can go online and look at your year of games in Nintendo's eyes, at least. And it's personalized stats. I assume we've all received this email and checked them out online. And it's always very interesting to see. There's some really cool stats. It's like they give you your monthly stats, like which months were your busiest months. And mine were January and May, just FYI. And guess why May was the busiest?
I wonder.
Yeah, think about this for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. What did you guys get in your little wrap-up? I mean, was May also your busiest month?
I got to get to my busiest month part.
Actually, for me, It was June. Although it was for, which presumably all of us, it was for Tears of the Kingdom, which I did get in May, but for whatever reason, we played it more in June. Yeah. Maybe because we were going so slowly. And, you know, maybe in June we finally started progressing on some of the dungeons or whatever, but.
Mm. Yeah, May was definitely my biggest definitely Tears of the Kingdom related. I have to just give a little disclaimer that because I have multiple accounts for different regions, because I do reviews, obviously, for Pure Nintendo, I'm only looking at my personal account, which means most of my review games aren't captured here. So there's actually, this is only telling half of the story for me, to be honest. So
you actually will play Gemma. Mm-hmm. You'll play like the different games on different accounts, because you can play any game on your main account, even if it's another region.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why. I just have this thing where I separate it. I don't know why. I probably shouldn't, because at the end of the year, I was trying to log into my American account and I couldn't remember my password. I'm like, I want to see, compare, like, because for example, on my personal account, I played 40 games this year, right? And I wonder how many games, I imagine it's probably on par, if not more, because I did at least 40 reviews this year. So I'd love to see, how many I actually did on my, like, American account, my US account, which is the one I use for Pure Nintendo. So yeah, I would be interested. I'll have to check it out. I tried to do it before the show, couldn't log in. So I'm like, oh well, this is the personal one at least. So things like Tears of the Kingdom, Mario Kart, those kinds of things I do on my Australian account. Also, that is,
and you know, Kirk's thinking that, hey, this is why I only have my one account. Yeah. I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, see, I got 100% accurate results here.
Yes, exactly. I know. Maybe my new year resolution should be to just use the one account. And the other thing is, it's silly because I only have the online connection in my Australian account. So if any of my review games need online connectivity, I actually do have to use the Australian account. So it's not even accurate from that perspective. It's not clear cut. Anyway, sorry, that was a little divergent there. But what's your highlights, Kirk? What's happening? What happened in 2023 for you that you'd like to share?
Well, the funny thing is, as I'm looking at my monthly playtime here, is the drop-off is significant. My busiest month was March. I had 118 hours.
Right.
February and April were right there in the 116, 112. May, I only put in 95 when Tears of the Kingdom came out, but that's also because my son was playing it. So we probably put more time into the Switch, but his account, accounted for probably half of it. But boy, you look at August, 48 hours, October, 41, November, 37, which sounds to me like I'm doing my review games and not a whole lot else. I don't have any games that I'm really just digging a lot of time into. So, I mean, I don't know if that's always the case or if it's just because we're at the end of the Switch's cycle.
Yeah, interesting.
But my top game was Tears of the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Second place was Atelier Ryza 3. And third place was Fire Emblem Engage.
Nice. What about you, Trev? What were your top three?
Tears of the Kingdom was the front runner by a huge margin.
Yeah.
Actually, some of my biggest, my other big month was January. I think, like you said, Gemma, that was the case for you as well. And I had an old one from last year, which was Pokemon Arceus, which was one of my favorite games from last year. It was actually runner up for Game of the Year for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that got a ton of time early in the year. Also, Metroid Prime Remastered. That was another early release from early this year, and that got a lot of playtime. Before Zelda came out. So, it's interesting looking at Tears of the Kingdom in triple digits and then, seeing these others in a couple dozen hours at most.
It's the same story for me, I think. In fact, mine's very similar to yours, Trev, because Tears of the Kingdom is number one, obviously. Then my second one is Mario Kart 8, actually, Deluxe. So we spent a lot of time playing that this year. And I mean, we did have a lot of DLC for it. I do tend to play it when family comes over. We kind of just always pick up Mario Kart 8. So it does get a lot of love. And then the third one for me is also a Pokemon title, but it's Pokemon Violet, which I spent a lot of time in January playing. And that's from last year as well. So it doesn't even go towards my game of the year or anything like that. But Yeah, I was on holidays in January because that's our summer over here, and I had some time off, so I spent a lot of time catching up on that game because I think it came out like October, November last year. So, yeah, that's kind of just catching up.
It's funny to me that you guys have such a drop off after Tears of the Kingdom because my top three games are separated by only 13 hours.
Right. There you go.
Well, your games, though, are big, like RPGs and stuff like that are
It. These games. And I haven't even, there are still some DLC levels that I haven't even done for Fire Emblem Engage. So when I go to finish it, although technically I haven't finished Tears of the Kingdom either. And that's probably a discussion for another time.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Well, it's very interesting. I mean, my gaming trends are another interesting topic. I didn't really know what would be my top, but action is my top. I suppose, does Tears of the Kingdom come under action or adventure?
My top is action too.
Mine's I had 44%.
Yeah, yours would be role-playing. RPG is my fourth. Yeah, number four for me, apparently.
It was my third, and I think it's mostly Kemco RPGs that I reviewed.
Yeah.
I'll be so happy to hear that.
Yeah, so any other things that are of interest in this wrap-up? Because it's a, you know, I love the style of it. It sort of scrolls down and across, and yeah, there's lots of cool images and things. Have you guys shared?
What were your total games?
Sorry?
What were your total games that you played for 2023?
40 games. Yeah, 40 games on my account. Yeah, what about you?
I had 63.
Oh, wow. But see, that's not all of my games, so.
What'd you have, Kirk?
I had 60.
Oh, close. But a lot of times, Jen might play on my account, so that could pad my numbers a bit.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I would like to see the full numbers. Like, I'm looking at this animation of the games floating by, and I would like to see how some of the ones that would be, like, in the middle, where they stack up against the rest.
Exactly. Yeah, me too, because it does show some games that I know I did not put a lot of time into. I'm like there's a demo in there. I'm like, huh, yeah, I forgot I even played that. Okay. Whereas others, obviously, I played a lot of. So it would be interesting.
I just find it interesting to see what I reviewed versus what I play for fun.
Well, see, that's why I do the separation. Not really. But
It's pros and cons to each, I guess.
Yeah. If I could log in and find the details, it would make it more relevant and interesting. So, yeah, sorry about that. But, yeah, we have, because I think you can have, is it 8 accounts on the Switch? And we use all 8 because the kids have one each. I have 4 because I also have one for my...
So you must have a family account for online.
Well, I don't. That's the thing. I only use my main account for online. That's why if there's a review game that needs online, I use my main account.
Oh.
Yeah. I probably do need to upgrade it for that purpose, though, because, you know, like the kids like to play a game. For example, my son Harrison wanted to play Tears of the Kingdom. He played it under his account. I mean, you don't need online for that, so it's fine. But, yeah, he would have had a bunch of hours on that as well. But if he needs to play a game that does have online capabilities, then he kind of can't on his account, I guess. And that's, yeah. So I've got 4 accounts because I've got Australia, US, Europe, and Japan. So the European and Japanese one don't get much use. It's more just in case I need to get something from eShop from those regions. But yeah, it would be interesting to check it out. I'll try to check all of them and see. Yeah.
But, next week you can follow up.
yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's a nice little thing to have. And, you know, if listeners want to share any of theirs with us, let us know. We'd love to hear your top games of the year. But speaking of Pokemon, I guess, and this is a little kind of news item here because we're just talking about you're playing Arceus, I was playing Violet, and there is some DLC for Pokemon Scarlet Violet, which has just come out. 14th, I think it came out, which is part 2 of the DLC packs, and that is the Indigo Disc. Now, Trev, I don't think you even picked up Scarlet or Violet in the end, did you?
I did not.
No. And I mean, I can't say anything because I didn't get Arceus. So.
Oh.
I know. It was on my list.
See, it's too bad you don't live nearby. We could trade. But.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. That would have been cool. Because, yeah, I do have the physical version of Violet.
That's what we did as kids, you know, a kid on the street you know, each kid will buy a different game and then you just trade them off because, you know, we only get a couple bucks for allowance. So that way we get to play as many games as we could.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I did try, I think it was the Teal Mask at PAX. So I did get some exposure to that, but I haven't tried the Indigo Disc. I'm interested. I might look it up and see how much that is and whether I will have time over the Christmas break maybe to check it out. I wonder, because we're doing our Games of the Year soon, and I can't put this in because I haven't played it, but would this count? Because it's a 2022 game, but it's DLC for the game.
I think it would have to, because I know quite a few people are going to be weighing in on the Mario Kart DLC. And didn't Scarlet and Violet already get DLC earlier this year?
Yeah, I think October was the part one release.
Yeah. So I think it'd be valid. I don't know how many will have it, you know, on their list, especially being a late release. A lot of times these kind of mid to late December games get, you know, pushed aside, but it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, if something came out at this time of year, even, you know, like the Game Awards, for example, we talked about recently, their nominations were, what was it, around Thanksgiving? So if it came out after Thanksgiving, it can't be nominated. So, yeah.
Which is crazy, because Black Friday is like the shopping day. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
If we're doing DLC, I think I need to add another one to the list.
Ooh, okay.
I didn't
even too late? Better, that. I better DM me right this second.
Okay, here it comes. Future Redeemed for Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
Ah, yeah, of course. You spent a lot of time with that this year.
I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you should include that. I definitely
will say, not to get off topic, but for our personal staff voting for a top 10 man, we got a real duke it out battle between two particular games.
Ooh,
fun! Okay.
And like, I'm really soliciting votes from people who didn't vote just to break like a tie. Like, that's how.
Do I have an opinion on these games? Did I weigh in on either one?
You did. You weighed in on both, actually. So,
all right, I'm ready to go.
And so did you, Gemma.
Yeah, interesting. Yes.
So this is the closest vote I've seen, and I've been with Pure Nintendo now for 10 years, and this is the closest I've seen since Splatoon versus Mario Maker on the Wii U.
Oh wow! Okay.
Which was like, I think one vote decided it, and this is comparable.
Yeah, interesting. That's really cool. So we're saving this for our special Game of the Year podcast in a couple weeks. Is that right?
Yeah, because who knows if somebody's going to vote or change their mind. Or, I mean, I'm looking at these numbers and I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
If it's a tie, you probably get to make that call and break the tie, I guess, right?
Yeah. You're vice president. You're our Kamala Harris. Casting that vote to get the bills passed.
I hadn't thought about it. I think then I'll dig deep. I'll reach to past contributors. Be like, hey, James, what do you think of
James?
Tristan.
Yeah. That's a good idea, actually. So get some special guest input. Yeah. I love that. Cool. All right. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that soon. Just another piece of interesting news, because we were talking about Tears of the Kingdom, but series director, is he the director? Aonuma has been talking a bit recently about Zelda games in general, and he even mentioned the Switch 2 in vague kind of way, and how they go about developing new Zelda games with new hardware, that sort of thing. But what he also was talking about, and who posted this? Was that Kirk or Trev who found this interesting news?
Oh, yeah, I put it up because...
Yeah.
Well, you want me to just run with it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing that stuck out is, I'm just going to read, this is a quote from the, was it IGN or Kotaku? I think it was IGN.
I think it was an interview with IGN that GameSpot reported, yeah.
Yeah, he said basically, this direct quote, it's interesting when I hear people say they prefer the older games, talking about Zelda, of course, because I'm wondering, why do you want to go back to the type of game where you're more limited or more restricted in the types of things you can play? I do understand the desire that we have for nostalgia, so I can also understand it from that aspect. And when I was reading this, I guess my initial thought is, you know, they're translating this. You know, is there something lost in translation? Because reading that initially comes off a little bit odd to me. Mm-hmm. Because he's asking a question, you know, why do you want to go something to where you're more limited? And I think that on a conceptual level, that's kind of flawed, because it's saying, oh, you know, less freedom equals less fun. And I don't agree that's true. And I also think it comes off maybe a slightly tone deaf to say that it's just for nostalgia.
Yeah.
But I have to wonder if something was lost in translation. I do not think he would be intentionally disrespectful to his audience. I don't think Nintendo is ever intentionally disrespectful. You know, that culture, I think, is they really want to please people, but
it's
something to think about.
Yeah, it is, exactly. I think, you know, he definitely spoke about innovation, and I think that's also a very Nintendo based theme. Like, they are, you know, we've seen that with console after console, from the, you know, 3DS, Wii, etc., Wii U even with the gamepad, even the Switch with the hybrid console. Like, they're always innovating, and I guess they do the same with their games. Like, they always try to take it to new places, but that doesn't mean the older styles don't have a place either, right? So, and Nintendo, it's funny, because speaking about nostalgia, Nintendo relies on nostalgia a lot, I think, you know, with their, like, the online collection that we have, you know, the Virtual Console previously, all the old games, and then the re-releases like Super Mario RPG. They do rely on that nostalgia quite deeply, I think. Nintendo fans are quite nostalgic for those older games. So you definitely wouldn't want to disrespect fans that way. So maybe it is a case of lost in translation or whatever. But I don't think he was trying to be disrespectful. And I don't think, yeah, I don't think he meant that at all. I think he's just...
Yeah, I think that's like more of a knee-jerk reaction. But
yeah,
I guess I would say if you're genuinely... Sometimes people say, I don't know if it's a defensive mechanic, it'd be like, oh, I can't see why somebody would like this, or I don't understand. Mm-hmm. If you genuinely want to understand, Nintendo fans are not shy about sharing their opinions.
Yes.
So you're really only limited by your own desire to understand why somebody can love an open world Zelda and a linear Zelda.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Why somebody longs for traditional dungeons. Mm-hmm. These aren't difficult concepts to wrap your head around, even if you individually don't agree with them. You should at least be able to understand them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean, the same could be said with Mario. Mario has traditional 2D platforming roots, and then it has a 3D side of it as well, and they both coexist quite nicely. We just got a new 2D Mario recently. Even though it was very fresh and different, it still had, at its base, it was still a platformer with the usual Mario mechanics. And I'm sure there's going to be some sort of Odyssey sequel or a new 3D Mario at some point, probably Switch 2 related. But those two, though, you know, Mario seems to be able to coexist in both worlds, and I think Zelda should be able to as well. Excuse me. There's no reason why we can't have, you know, the 3D, these open world kind of experiences, as well as the top down ones that a lot of fans love, including myself, and I know you do as well, Trev. So yeah. I hope it's not a sign, but I think maybe they seem to be riding pretty well on the waves, I don't know, is that a saying? The success, riding on the success of the, you know, Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, and probably they'll continue in that vein in some way or some shape or form. But we really don't want them to forget about Zelda's roots, and yeah, hopefully there's a future for that kind of side of things as well. Do you have an opinion on that, Kirk?
I do. I think... usually when someone makes a statement like this, my first thought was what prompted it. Like if you put out Breath of the Wild, you put out Tears of the Kingdom, and these are huge, very open, very fun games to play that just got absolutely fantastic reviews. And then you've got people coming up to you and saying, we don't like this. We want to go back to the old thing. That's going to put someone on the defensive, I think. So he's probably asked that a lot and now is just confused about, you know, well, I don't get it, because maybe this is the game that Zelda would have always been had the technology always been there. Mm. but I also think that it wasn't meant to be disrespectful either to people who like that more as a, you know, this is what we're giving you and this is really good. So, you know, we're going to focus on this for a bit. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if down the road, like you said, that they do revert back to that kind of linear thing, like they do with Mario, where they give us, as you mentioned, the different style games. But, you know, right now, if this is the direction they're going and they're having fun developing it and they're very proud of the work they're doing, then, you know, keep it up, guys. Don't let people tell you what to do. You're the developers and you're making a lot of money. Go.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, obviously, we just have said how much time we spent with Tears of the Kingdom this year. So we obviously got a lot out of it, and it's sold really well. It's got, like you said, really good reviews, so why not continue? Interesting.
Although I will also add, going back to, I mentioned that I haven't finished Tears of the Kingdom, and I don't think I'm going to, because I, after playing, you know, putting so much time into it in May and June when it came out, then I put it aside for other games and reviews. I went back into it in September and found that I just really didn't care about where I was or what the happening with the story. I was more frustrated about having to continue to build more stuff. So along those lines, although this, you sink a lot of time into this game and it's great when you're into it, there, it's less likely that I'm ever going to push all the way through and get it done, whereas I absolutely would have on the more linear games where the story drives everything and you're kind of shoved down very speedily from beginning to end, as opposed to just side venture, side quest, do this, build this. So I understand the appeal of both games, but I guess that's what I'm saying. I like them both. I will spend more time on the open world games, but it's less likely that I'm ever going to finish them because it's easier to just lose interest after, after 137 hours.
I completely agree. Yes.
I didn't even think about that, but that's a good point too. Like, I feel like this generation of gamers who have, you know, grown up with Minecraft and whatnot, like we see crafting and building and those creative aspects kind of put in games that, you know, they weren't in there prior because maybe that's what people are expecting and that's what people want. And, you know, I think of it, you know, with us as middle-aged gamers, are we like the old man yelling at the cloud? Cause you know, I don't want this, but that's what people, you know, for better or worse, that's what people have become used to. And, you know, I would just say, make sure those elements fit in a game, you know, organically and that they don't overpower, you know, expected stuff. Like I know a lot of people love Zelda for plot and story. You know, they were usually secondary for me, but if you're looking for that type of tale, you know, these new games, they don't deliver it in the usual fashion. So
just something. Or at least don't put things in the way when we want to go to the story. And that's what the crafting was. I mean, you had to build so many things just over and over and over again. But I just want to get across this river. I don't need to spend 15 minutes building this massive bridge or jetting off on a tire or something. And that's, I'm going to flip over to Fire Emblem Engage real quickly too, because that's what I love so much about this game was they, after three houses where there was so much to do with the school and there were dances and choir practices and just so many things that were distracting you from the actual gameplay. And they shoved all that aside or at least minimized it in Fire Emblem Engage. So if you wanted to get in and just have turn-based battles and a story that pushed from battle to battle, that's what you got. And that's why I was so happy with Fire Emblem Engage is because they didn't let anything get in the way of the core gameplay. And so it was just a much more enjoyable experience from start to finish.
That is a good point and a good comparison. I agree with that as well. I did enjoy my time with Fire Emblem Engage a lot more. Well, I mean, Three Houses was really good, of course. It was wonderful and beautiful and there was so much to do. That's a really good analogy though, or a really good comparison, those two Fire Emblem titles versus Tears of the Kingdom and more traditional Zelda title. Because yeah, you're right. They do, it's not bloated exactly. It's daunting. I find it daunting.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I liked both games, but I will never pick up Three Houses again, because if I, even if I want to play one of the different characters, I know all the things I'm going to have to go through again. Yeah. They're fine the first time, but maybe not necessary a second, but it's Fire Emblem Engage. I'll play it over and over again and just focus on different characters, because it's just battle. And, you know, occasionally you're doing something off at that island or whatever we were on. But it wasn't nearly as invasive to the process.
Yeah, interesting. And I know, because Trev, you replay Zelda games quite often, like, you know, Ocarina of Time or something, or maybe A Link to the Past or whatever. Do you think that those linear styles are easier to replay?
I do. And traditionally, Jen and I will, you know, there's a lot of Zelda games, but every few years, it seems like we kind of go through a pattern where we want to replay, you know, the classics. And, you know, for as much as I enjoy Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, for that matter, I mean, it's, you know, it's one of my favorites of the year. They do lack some of that immediate appeal. You know, I can't just, I guess I can't play it enough to where it has that comfortable feel where I know most of it. Mm. You know, whereas some of those top-down Zeldas or even early 3D Zeldas, I've played them enough where it's like, okay, there's maybe not the thrill of discovery, but it's that comfortable feeling. It's like, I know what's coming. I know what to look forward to. And for better or worse, these new games don't have it, which, you know, initially is a great thing, but maybe over time, it just doesn't prompt as much replay value for me.
Yeah, interesting. That's really interesting. I think that was a very good conversation about Zelda. Any final thoughts on that topic before we move on? No? Kirk, nothing else to add?
Nope, I've said my piece.
Said your piece. Okay, good. Well, thank you. And listeners, let us know your thoughts on traditional versus open world Zeldas, because it's worth discussing. I think it's a huge conversation piece. And I mean, it sounds a little negative. We're not. Obviously, we loved Tears of the Kingdom. It was our most played game of the year, and it's going to be in our top 10 for sure. But we just don't want to lose that, classic style, the linear style, the top-down style. Absolutely. I would be very, if Nintendo announced a new game in that series, in that vein of the top-down linear style, I would be super excited and I would pre-order it straight away. Anyway, let's move on to
Gemma. Just on that note.
Yeah.
Two, it would tide us over, because what was the gap between Breath of the Wild, that was a launch game, 2017, and Tears of the Kingdom, which just came out this year? Mm-hmm. You know, that's why, you know, I love like Link's Awakening. You know, it was a smaller game, but, you know, I can play through that in 20 hours. I could beat that 5 times and still not play as much as I have with Tears of the Kingdom. So you can see why it's easier to replay. And, you know, or even Skyward Sword, you know, these other games tide you over while you wait for these massive open world epics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they do take a long time to develop because they are so huge. And I guess the next one is going to have to be bigger and, I mean, bigger and better, right? Like he said that. Anuma said that they always look for new things to do, new things to try, and that's one of the great things about Nintendo. But don't forget where you came from is the message there. Cool. Well, let's move on to some games that we're playing that at the moment, and I'm excited to get to yours, Trev, but I guess, should I start with mine because I'm at the top of the list? I don't know. mine won't take too long. Mario Kart Tour has a holiday special at the moment. And I know I keep talking about Mario Kart Tour. It's a mobile game, but I really like it. I play it every day. I just jump on and do a couple of races. It's so fun. And I've mentioned this before that every 2 weeks they have a theme. And of course, at the moment, it's a holiday theme. So I've just bought, exchanged for rubies, which you collect over time. I've just exchanged rubies for like a holiday Mario. He's like got a little Santa hat on. It's just, I just love collecting all the characters. But the tracks are really good. And I've said this before, but I really hope somehow that these cool tracks can make it into a Switch or a Switch 2 situation, because it's not just, what they do is they don't just have the tracks that you know and love, but they mix them up. They add ramps everywhere, or they reverse it and then add speed boosts everywhere. It's just, they kind of, it's like a remix, and it's really well done. I really, really enjoy it. So it keeps it fresh. It keeps it fun. And I just wanted to throw that out there again, because I'm still playing it quite a lot. And every 2 weeks or so, the other thing, the reason I have to keep coming back is because you get rewards for obviously completing all the tracks. And there's like a bunch, there must be like there's four trucks per cup, and there's like 10 or 15 cups every 2 weeks. So there's a lot of trucks. And then there's like one set that's like a competitive set, and you, whoever gets the most points gets all these cool prizes, like a new character or a new cart or something like that. So there's some really good players, and I was number one and now number two in my current race. And I'm like, oh, now I've got to get some more points. So you replay them to get more points. And you use things like boosts, and every time you get a coin, it like adds a tiny bit of points. So you try to collect all the coins, you try to get all the boosts and the jumps, and yeah, it's addictive for me.
Gemma, hearing you talk about Mario and the Santa hat makes me think of Smithers talking about Malibu Stacy, but she has a new hat.
Yeah.
It's like, is that all?
Yes, exactly. It's Mario with a new hat. I need it, of course. It is cool. Yeah. So that's why, and that's probably why Mario Kart 8 is in my top played list, because I do play a lot of Mario Kart and I really love it. I have to say, I had a short break from Mario Kart 8 semi-recently, and I was playing a lot of Tour, and I went back to Mario Kart 8, and because it's quite different the way you play, because on mobile you're just using touch to control your directions. Obviously in Mario Kart 8 you're using buttons and, you know, control pads and stuff. I was really bad at first. I'm like, oh, whoops, I need to actually control my character a bit better. So yeah, need to practice. You need to like focus on both styles and switch between them. Do we want to go to Kirk next, just in case you need to leave at some point? Do we want to go to Astora?
I'll be fine. Let's hear what you have to say about your next game, because this one sat in our review queue for quite some time.
EA Sports FC 24, which came out, I think, September or something like that. It's been in our queue for a while. It's just sat there looking quite sad, and I finally picked it up just yesterday. I felt sorry for it, but to be honest, I don't play a lot of sports games, and I think maybe none of us do, which is why it's sat there so long. So this is, let me start by saying, this game is like a 29 gig download. I had to archive so much stuff to install this game. It's huge. Like, it's bigger, I think, than Tears of the Kingdom was. I think it's the biggest game I now have. So
I think that's why it sits. I got to be honest. I think, because I do like some of the sport games. Like, I grew up with FIFA, like on the 3DO. And just from experience, I know even a physical cartridge, I got one of NBA 2K, and it still took a ton of gigabytes to run the updates and all this stuff. And I've even turned down codes in the past because I said, you know what? Our staffers don't want to archive dozens of games or buy a new SD card. In this case, the code came unsolicited. So, you know, that's why we have it. But yeah, that's ridiculous. It really is.
And I mean, when you start playing it, you can see why, because it's there's a lot of video, like there's a lot of animation, right? There's all of these players are real players from all over the world, and that's one thing that it definitely has in its favor. You can choose any team you like. Like, I chose Brisbane, like the Brisbane Heat, which is my local team, I guess. So that's an Australian soccer team, and you can choose anyone in Australia, anyone in Argentina, or you know, Denmark, whatever, the US, there's all the teams you can choose. So there's a huge roster. They all the characters are, you know, real life characters have names. And when you start up, you know, a game, there's like, it's like you're watching a live match, right? So there's the players go on, they kind of shake each other's hand. There's a ref who sort of points, you're going this way, whatever. The commentators come on and start talking, and it's like they're actually live. I mean, I can't imagine how many hours worth of dialogue they must have recorded to make it seem that way. But you know, they're making comments on the goals that you miss and the goals that you get, the tackles, etc. So it feels very immersive and engaging in that way. So you're very much a part of the game, and it's quite fun. So my nephew is quite a soccer fan, so I thought, well, he's coming over, this would be a good one to play with him. So we played it together, we had a few matches, we won, we did really well, we were very excited, we were high-fiving each other. So it, if you like sports games, and you, particularly soccer, I guess, it's going to fill that need. It is like FIFA, it is a big, you know, a big title that that has so many different modes. It's quite overwhelming. I have to, the menu probably is a little daunting and I need to kind of nut out what each thing means at the moment, because I sort of just tried to find how we could quickly jump into a game. But there's obviously a series you can do. You can create your own team. You can do all these sorts of things. There's a lot of online connectivity. I think, you know, one aspect that's, I guess, maybe a negative, if you've ever played an EA game, I think you know you have to connect it to an EA account, which is kind of annoying. You definitely need the internet for this one, so you have to have an online connection. So there's a few little things like that. But the game itself, it plays pretty well. It's pretty fun. I didn't notice too much in terms of glitches or stuttering or anything like that. We had one random thing where the goalie was just standing there for a while, and we're like, why aren't you kicking the ball? And eventually it kind of reset, and he moved into the right spot and kicked the ball. But we thought it was a glitch. We thought we were going to have to turn the game off. But he was standing there for, like, I don't know, 20 seconds. And we're like, what's going on?
That's soccer, right?
Yeah. Maybe it was just part of the game. I don't know. So the animations are quite good for the Switch, I would say. I haven't compared it to, like, the other consoles, but it's pretty good. Like, they look pretty realistic. You can tell it's not video, but... And they sort of sometimes move a little bit, like maybe their feet don't quite touch the ground. But generally, 99% of the time, it looks pretty good, I would say. A bit of stuttering here and there, but generally the animation's pretty smooth. So, yeah, I was thinking about picking it up for a while just because it was sitting there so long. And I'm like, well, someone needs to review this. So I'm glad I did. And I'll work on my review and get something up soon. But that's my current review title, so... Yeah, very big game, both gigabytes-wise and content-wise. So, yeah, we'll see what my final thoughts are on that one. Yeah, any questions on EA Sports FC 24?
Nope, but I will say I'm glad you picked it up too.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it's all good. It's all good. Well, let's move on to Kirk's title. Is this a review title?
Speaking of picking things up and how well the PR reps know us now, I had claimed another review from the company that had this one out, and the gentleman actually said, you know, I'm really surprised you didn't claim this game.
Oh,
and I said, okay. I said it was on my list, but we've got a lot in the queue and I was afraid we wouldn't be able to get to it in time. So if there's no rush, I'll be happy to take it. And he sent me the code.
Oh, nice.
This is it's a side-scrolling hack and slash RPG. It's a fighting game. I don't want to say it's like a Castlevania, but having just finished 9 years of Shadows, where the combat is sort of the same, although the whole presentation is a bit different. That's what I thought I was getting into, but this one's not. It is much more difficult. There are multiple challenge modes, so I have a feeling I'm going to have to knock that down a bit so I could actually get through the review. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about it is it was developed, I believe, by one person, Keizo, I believe is the name. Wow. And it, according to its entry on the eShop, it's been in development for 14 years.
Wow.
So I'm sure it's gone through a lot of iterations, but the story, again, I haven't gotten too far into it, but from what I understand, it's got a very good story. There's an awful lot to do in this game. There's a lot of customization. The combat, like, I started to play it and it was like, no, you got to do the demo first. So I went back and did the demo and fully understood, because the combat's challenging on this. There's a lot to do. There's a lot to customize. But it looks very much like the type of game where once I get into the flow of it, it's just going to be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to doing so.
Wow. It does look quite in depth, doesn't it? With those menus, like a lot of choices there. And for a one person team, those graphics look super impressive.
Yeah. The visuals are really nice. And so far they run really well on the Switch too. So, and honestly, with this type of game, a lot of the appeal is that, like, I like going into new worlds and finding new attacks and seeing what they look like. And of course the boss battles, they're so crazy sometimes, the combat and just the way they're designed. So there's a lot of joy in finding that and finally overcoming them.
Yeah. That looks really cool. Yeah. It's like, is it a giant purple dragon in one of the screenshots? Looks pretty impressive and yeah. hardcore.
I haven't made it there yet, but
yeah,
I'm sure I'll counter a lot like that along the way.
Yeah, nice one. Thank you, Kirk. Mm-hmm. Trev, we finally are playing a game that is
here we go.
Pikmin 4. So glad you could join the party. What do you think?
Yeah.
How's Pikmin 4 going?
Better late than never, right?
Yeah.
No, I knew this was going to be a staple in our year-end list, and I said, I don't want to be the only one who hasn't played this, so I picked it up, and it's great. You know, surprise. I knew it would be.
Yeah.
I've liked all the Pikmin games, and it's already jumped into, like, my top five, and, you know, we're only, I don't know. We're only a few hours, and I've been playing with Jen.
Mm-hmm.
I will say one of the things that I liked more than I thought I would is the sort of two-player type thing they have.
Oh, yeah.
Because originally I was thinking, oh, man, you know, how do I go from, you know, like Pikmin 3 had, like, what, on the Switch, the split, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to do this, just shooting these pebbles, like, how's that going to be? But I'm having a lot of fun. Like, Jen likes running around, and I've been picking off enemies from a distance and shooting flowers, and I've been shooting the little Pikmin in the butt when they're, like, carrying things so they run faster. And I think it's a neat little way to trade off and take turns and get and still have a cooperative experience.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm. It's better than it could have been. Like, it could have been wasted. I still would prefer the co-op, but it's not as simple as, say, the Mario, what was it? Mario Galaxy's two-player kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's neat, too, because, like, when we were in, I don't know what you call them, but, like, those levels where you're going, it's, like, sort of a time thing. You're going against, like, the Pikmin, like, human hybrid guys. And like, we want to see how good you are with Dandori or whatever.
Yes.
And, like, you're running around, and Jen's like, quick, get that enemy over here. And I'm like, no, turn this way. And it's like, I'm like, it's just a lot of chaos in a good way. And I also like being able to have the pebble shooter because you don't lose as many Pikmin. It's mm-hmm. just, mm-hmm. it was always gut wrenching to me to see the little guys get eaten and hear their squeals. And this way, I think we've only lost, you know, very few, you know, compared to all the other Pikmin games where they were just casualties of war.
Yeah, exactly. That is a really good point, and I love that aspect as well. And so does my son. He hates it when the Pikmin perish. So, yeah, we try to keep as many as possible. And when you get to the nighttime, because I'm assuming you're not at that point yet, but it's really useful at nighttime because those enemies come charging at you. They have those red eyes. Kirk will know what I'm talking about.
Oh, and, yes.
Yeah. Having someone on the pebble shooter at that point is really helpful.
Yeah. We just rescued the last member of our team. So I don't know if that, at what point we are in the game.
Mm.
There are a lot of people to rescue.
Yeah.
Well, at least of the core, like the core picture team, like I think we're on day, we're a little over a week, like in game, like we're on day 9 or something.
So. Cool. Oh, that's awesome. I'm really glad you got to try it before the end of the year. We'll see how that fares. That was a hard one to place in my list because of Mario and Zelda and Pikmin. They were the three. I was just like, well, two Marios really, but I just, the ordering of those four games was really, really hard for me.
Yeah, I tell you, there's a lot of high quality, you know, and I feel bad. Like my list is dominated by first party stuff for the most part, as is kind of the collective list of everyone as a whole, but yeah, it's tough, you know. It's tough when the games are this good.
It is. It is very, very tough. Yeah, well, that's great. I'm very happy to hear about that. Pikmin 4, I'm sure Kirk is also happy because you reviewed it and gave it a very good review. I think it was 9.5 or something, right? It was very high.
Yeah, it's one of my top three.
Well-deserved. Very well-deserved. A couple of little news pieces before we sign off, but I did want to mention a game that I played last week, which is a Suica game. Which I really enjoyed. It's free again. You guys now have a chance because I didn't realize this, but I think it was just free in Australia last time. Now it's free in the US for the 15th to the 20th of December for online subscribers. So this is an example where I have the game installed because I played it last week. I can't play it on my US account because I don't have the internet. Does that make sense? I don't have I'm not an online subscriber for the US account.
You gotta get that family account.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's there if you're interested. It is cute and a time waster, but it's fun. The other piece of news is another Code Recollection has a new trailer and a demo. So this game comes out on the 19th of January 2024, so it's about a month away. And it's a collection of two games. I believe one was a DS or a 3DS game, and one was a Wii game, I think.
I remember the DS for sure.
Yeah, so I think it's sort of HD remaster of those two titles. So the demo is there now if you want to check it out. I have downloaded it. I haven't checked it out yet. Maybe next week I can report on that. But yes, just wanted to kind of highlight that for everybody listening and for you too as well, in case you're interested. I know Justin, I think, was quite interested in this one, I believe.
I'll grab it.
Yeah. Might as well. I mean, the demo's out. So yeah, I'll give it a go during the week. But we managed to hit the hour pretty well there. Was there anything else you guys had to say or wanted to add before we sign off?
I would just ask maybe listeners, depending on where you're listening to the podcast, if you're able to comment, let us know what your favorite Switch games were for 2023.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely let us know. You can definitely leave a comment on YouTube if you're watching on YouTube, and we'd love to have your like and subscribe and hit that bell for the notifications. We're also on all the podcast channels. You can find us on Spotify, Amazon, Apple. So choose your poison. And we're also, we do produce a bi-monthly magazine, which is currently in development for our next edition. If you'd like to receive a copy, head on over to patreon.com/purenintendo. We'd love your support. And I think that's it for now. But thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Kirk and Trev, for joining me this week. And until next week, game on, everybody. Bye.
Mata so long. Thank you.